And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you to The Sky is Falling, episode number one of the season, as your Golden Gophers head out to Cal Berkeley and in the final 20 minutes of the game absolutely implode on themselves offensively, defensively, special teams, coaching, you name it. And now everybody on the internet is trying to tell me this team is going to only win two games. So to try and help you get through it, try to have some solace going into the bye week, because not only do you see this team lose, Mr. Luke Buer, now you get a bye week to sit in it. And it wasn't a pretty final 20 minutes of the game. As someone who was out there in Cal Berkeley, I'll say a few things. Number one, that is a beautiful stadium out in the hills, of which I think the coolest thing that I saw, and I talked to Justin Gard about this, was on the hills overlooking the stadium. There were about 15 to 20 guys sitting up there just tailgating. Can you imagine watching a football game on a hill? Like, does that not bring nostalgic memories back of when you were about 12 years old? I'm thinking to myself, go ahead.
You know, it kind of reminds me of like the people that would look down like on the rooftops into Wrigley Field or something, right? Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It was a very unique venue, I'll say that. It was a pretty cool venue, something that I would say it was somewhat similar to the Rose Bowl, but not really.
Yeah,
I guess. The other question I got a lot from people were how many fans were there, Gopher fan and total fans. I know you watched the game. I'm going to ask your thoughts so then I can I don't know what the frame of reference here is.
It's hard to say because you're going to have to extrapolate from like a few shots, and it was dark, so you couldn't really see the whole bowl from my vantage point. I would guess that there was a good contingent of Gopher fans, probably on the like 3,000 to 5,000, and then maybe the total number of total occupancy percentage was maybe closer to like 60%.
I think you nailed it pretty well. I would say that stadium was about 60% full, and that's even not counting. They had a few sections that had the tarp over it that just had the Cal logo on it. Essentially, they can't sell the tickets, so let's not make it worse than it is on television when they do their shots.
Yeah,
I also think you nailed it with the two Gopher sections were right in the corners next to the Gopher bench.
Uh-huh.
I think 3,000 to 5,000 is a good contingent. The piped in noise from the stadium during
there was
15. It was loud.
There was piped in noise like into the TV. It seemed like some of the mics they had were super close to the band, so it sounded like it was super loud. But there's no way it could have been that loud.
All right. Well, I tried to give us a soft runway to get into this game, but 27-14 is the final score. Your Gophers are winning 14-10 with 4 minutes left in the third quarter on a Jameson Gears touchdown of. I made this tweet, and I do believe it. Why does Jameson Gears only catch the most incredibly tough?
I don't know, touchdown? Man. Maybe he just can't think.
It was a great ball, and he goes up and he grabs the rebound, which be still my beating heart as the former collegiate tight end. That's what you're supposed to do. It's just somewhat of a bit as I think back to even the Wisconsin game last year where he gets the wheel route touchdown, has to go up and grab that one. It's where I'll continue to say, the Tyler Johnson concentration drops from game one versus the ones that the plays he actually made just don't line up. But unfortunately, after the 14-10 lead, this thing falls apart. So where do you want to start? Because unfortunately, Luke, offense, defense, special teams, coaching, all things in between get to be questioned after a collapse like that.
Yeah, let's maybe start offensively. That tends to be where people want to focus early. So on the day the Gophers score 14 points, they had 335 yards of total offense. 205 of those were passing, 130 were on the ground. Your leading rusher was Femi Ijeboy with 85 yards on 16 carries. This is a game that saw saw A.J. Turner go down, already missing Darius Taylor, so that's obviously unfortunate. The Gophers in total rushed rushed the ball okay. There were spurts where it seemed they found some momentum. It was not consistent throughout. The pass catchers, it was an up and down day for the entire group, but obviously if you were watching, this was the Lamecki rocket ship Rockington game with 8 receptions, 106 yards. He averaged 13.3 yards per reception. He was fantastic. But otherwise, you know, for the rest of the crew, it maybe just wasn't good enough. We saw another instance where you had a few drops, etc. Or, for instance, the bobbled ball that you couldn't complete, which maybe would have been a big gainer. Or I shouldn't say couldn't complete, but you couldn't compete cleanly. But, yeah, and then the offensive line, at times Ryan just seemed to find a way to get some push, and maybe not push is the right way, but was able to open up enough holes, but then would seemingly struggle with some of the pressure as well. It was just really an up and down day. Just lastly, I'll just mention Drake Lindsey on the day was 19 of 32. That's 59%, 205 yards. He had one touchdown and one interception, not a great interception, maybe one that Brockington could have fought for a little bit more. But at the end of the day, I thought Drake Lindsey actually played pretty well, given he's a redshirt freshman, giving it his first true road test. But on the day of the offense, left some points out there for sure, and also lost some opportunities because of turnovers that weren't of their own doing. And then lastly, I'll just mention that this isn't a counting stat. I usually stick to the counting stats. But if memory serves, I looked at this earlier. Their starting position was only the 27-yard line versus the 40-yard line for Cal. So they weren't getting a ton of help from special teams in this game. I know we'll get into that more. But when you have to cover more field, it's harder to sustain drives and score points. So, yeah, all in all, offense wasn't great. You also had a missed field goal, which hurt, right? But yeah, it wasn't great, but you can see the potential is there. I mean, if you comparatively look, most people are going to say, well, Cal had a great offensive game. Well, Cal only outscored the Gophers by outrushed the Gophers by 5 yards. In yards, somewhat can be meaningless.
Out total yards.
Out total yards. You know, they threw the ball for almost 70, or they threw them for 74 more yards. But They weren't incredible either. The other thing that we should note, Ryan, offensively, is the 0 for 2 on fourth downs was really tough. That hurt as well. The downs kill you.
A few things. Other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
Yeah.
Second of all, Dan Barrero is somewhere in a St. Louis Park studio weeping at that long lead into the question, of which I don't even know that there was a question.
There's no question. That was mostly just going to be
counting
stats.
It was a good preamble. I'm not disagreeing with it. With my own preamble, I know some folks are asking, why am I listening to this on Monday? Well, it's because I didn't sleep yesterday. And when I made the executive decision, and by I made it, my wife made it for me because she's more sane than I was yesterday evening, of because this game got over so late in Berkeley, where it ended at 11 p.m. Pacific, didn't get back to the hotel until 2, and then I had a 6 a.m. flight out of San Francisco back to the Twin Cities. As all of you listeners know, and I posed the question, you should I stay up? I had many of you actually reach out to me and say, hey, I work third shift. Hey, I've done this before. You should just stay up. So I did. I worked through the night, was able to get everything done, and then I didn't nap on Sunday. I couldn't really turn my brain off after something like that. And then the funny part is, Luke, I'm going to date myself here, and I understand how elderly I'm about to sound, and I mean this of no disdain to folks who are also in my boat. My bowling league started last night.
Yeah.
All right. I'm in a bowling league. I'll out myself. I'm 33 years old. Let me live, okay?
You bowled for a while.
I did. I bowled a 267 last night on 0 hours of sleep,
not
which I don't
bad.
Know if I did that. I don't remember if that's a PR, but it's certainly within a few points. So, oh, good for me. So we're recording this on Monday. We apologize it's a day late, but I know some of the things I was thinking and saying at bowling to my friends, and that shouldn't be recorded for public consumption at any time. Now, with the Gopher offense, I'll ask you this, Luke. Do you want to start with the rushing or the passing?
Let's start with the rushing. I mean, when you don't have Darius Taylor, when you also lose A.J. Turner, you know, the identity changes quite a bit. I thought Femi was good. And yeah.
It's something to where we joked about it coming into the season, and I was somewhat joking, but the angry running back, overlord, however you want to refer to them, the things out of our control part of Gopher football are back for the third straight odd season. For those of you who need a recap of what in the world is Ryan talking about, in 2021, Minnesota was on running back five by midseason, which was the Kai Thomas and Bucky Irving end of the year. Now, things couldn't have gone any more in different directions for those two since they left the University of Minnesota, where Bucky Irving is now a second-round pick in your fantasy league, and Kai Thomas is at something called Washburn University, which I believe is NAIA in Kansas. Very different things, just making that note. But in 2021, yeah, injuries prevented Minnesota from doing a whole heck of a lot there. In 2023, they got injured. They were on the Jordan Newbin experience by the midseason point. And Jordan Newbin, who is now at Kent State and I believe has 11 carries for 18 yards for the Kent State Golden Flashes so far, got 127 carries for Minnesota that season. And now in 2025, Darius Taylor is hurt and A.J. Turner went down in this game. And I would tell you nothing is official because Fleck doesn't address injuries, but I have not heard good news behind the scenes about A.J. Turner's prognosis. And I am going to operate under the assumption that he's going to be out for at least the next few weeks. I would also address the Darius Taylor elephant in the room. He did not warm up at any point in Cal. Mm-hmm. So the Fleck quotes on, we got a real positive diagnosis. And then we saw the elite Pete Thamel tweet that morning saying he's doubtful. He didn't even warm up. Now, I'm not telling you I want him to push this injury, but it throws a lot of cold water on the Fleck quotes of a real positive diagnosis. So let me be clear. I am the one that is going to make some assumptions, and I'm going to change the goalpost for the purposes of this podcast and Darius Taylor's injury timeline with this going forward. Mm-hmm. I think a more accurate, hopefully, type of thing is to look at what happened prior to the North Carolina game last year. Darius Taylor got injured at a practice the media was at on August 13th. He tweaked his left hamstring. I will be clear, this is not the same hamstring that he tweaked against Northwestern State on the opening drive. Different hamstring. I hope it's around the same tweak because he missed the opener against North Carolina, returned for game two. The period of days in between those two events occurring was 25 days. 25 days from when he tweaked it to when he returned 100% to game action and played in 12 consecutive games. Now let's apply that timeline to what happened or what we've seen so far. That would mean that the Rutgers game, 21 days since he tweaked his hamstring, hopefully against Northwestern State, that would mean Darius Taylor is out, probably, potentially. Who knows, because Fleck won't address it. For the Rutgers game, it puts the Ohio State game then afterwards in serious question. I think he would be listed as questionable. And if he is not 100% and he is 99%, don't play him against Ohio State. Mm-hmm. I know some of you want to see that Gopher team at 100% capacity go into Columbus and win. I do too. But I think Darius Taylor being 100% is more important, which would then mean hopefully he's back at 100% for the Purdue game. That means you got at least two games to cover here yet without Darius Taylor. And unfortunately, they paid some big bucks out of the portal. And now big bucks, let me be clear for those of you who try to run with this, in Minnesota standards, to get someone like A.J. Turner. There was a reason he was sought after. And now if he's going to be out going forward, I think you got to, if you're Greg Harbaugh, the offensive coordinator, the bye week comes at a good time for him in this regard of, I believe you got to tweak the running schemes now, because coming into the year, they were going to be for Darius Taylor and A.J. Turner being the guys that get 85% of your running back touches. That's not going to be the case for the foreseeable future, in my opinion. And with Femi Ijeboye specifically, you mentioned the 16 carries for 85 yards. He had 9 missed tackles forced. The rest of the Gopher skill position players combined, when they had the ball in their hands on Saturday, 5 missed tackles. That's great for Femi Ijeboye, but it paints a certain picture of the rest of the skill position players right now that is not in the most pretty light. I know that's not the greatest vernacular there, but whatever. With Femme specifically, you can see it with his ability to... I don't even know what his... He reminds me some of Rodney Smith, if I had to choose a gopher running back of yesteryear to make a horrible comparison between. He doesn't have the physicality of a Shannon Brooks or the nature that Mo Ibrahim ran in between. He is his own player, but he reminds me more, in my eyes at least, of Rodney Smith than somebody else. With the running attack, though, it's just... Minnesota elected to go to a lot of 12 personnel, and it felt like Harbaugh wanted to will essentially Big Ten versus ACC them, which we've seen them do that with success before in bowl games, where Minnesota's 3-0 in ACC bowl games under Fleck largely because of the running game. But we've also seen them struggle to do so against North Carolina the last couple of years, and then against this game against Cal. Cal is a good run defense. Cal is one of the best run defenses in the ACC. Cal had allowed, I believe, 117 rushing yards in their first two games combined. And Minnesota's two tailbacks of A.J. Turner and Femi Ejiboy, plus Cam Davis in there, so I guess that trio, yeah, ran for somewhere around 140-something yards. Now, it was only on 4 yards a carry or so. But you ran the ball well enough. It's just the run game explosives are so tough to come by for this Harbaugh running offense. And I don't know if it's the offensive line not blocking it well. We can get to the offensive line, specifically the right side of the offensive line. I think in this day and age of college football now, where so many of these guys are making six figures, I think we just got to start putting egos aside when the money's involved the way that it is and say, I think there needs to be some changes on the right side of that offensive line, whether that's Dylan Ray at right tackle sliding into right guard to, in my opinion, it should be a competition at right guard during the bye week between Marcellus Marshall, who's the current starter, and Dylan Ray at right tackle sliding into guard to allow Khalid Tafai to spread his wings and fly. I think Nathan Roy has shown me enough, and I love the vinegar from this kid now. If you stayed all the way to the end at 1 a.m. to watch the final drive, may the Lord bless you and keep you and shine down upon you in that maroon and gold color light, because you are a true diehard for that tomfoolery. But I love the vinegar out of this kid, and I think he has more than held his own. He was the tackle who played better between the two, live and on the rewatch, in my opinion. And I'm excited to announce that we'll get Derek Burns back here very, very soon to get his impressions on the team and a breath of fresh air into the podcast with it too. But the running game, Luke, I think about that 3rd-and-7 call, which is there a more peak PJ Fleck call than 4th quarter, 10 minutes left. You're sort of in field goal range, but you're not really in field goal range.
Yeah.
And I would also say one of my favorite parts of when things aren't going well is my mentions on social media, of which we get to start to be blame the media. Because you know this, Luke, I'm a PJ Fleck pencil pusher, and I don't ask the tough questions. That's what we do in the media. We throw him softballs. What do you mean? There's nothing I enjoy more than that. And so I'm sure Jason, I don't care to find his last name, is, he's malding. I'm sure he's had a couple 1, 2, 3, 4 trying to tell me that we're not going to ask the tough questions about Collins' defense because that's the way it is. We asked about the Coy stuff, which we'll get to Coy. We asked about Danny Collins' lack of pressure at times. I know, weird thing to ask the head coach about, but we also asked about the 3rd down call. 10 minutes left, 3rd-and-7, and he's just like, yeah, we'd been running it well. I wanted to run it. Do you see how the theme has now gone from Kirk Ciarrocca to Mike Sanford to Greg Harbaugh in certain situations with things like that?
Yeah.
Where I hate it as much as all of you hate it, but what do you want me to ask him that you can get a specific reply to? Because you have to remember here, the way you phrase the question to them is going to elicit the response. And it's not going to be, and I know many of the fans, I've been reminded of this, including a couple of you that came up to the airport and talk to me about it, which I appreciate all of you more than you know, and I don't say that sarcastically. You allow me to live a life in my wife's basement that is pretty good. I got sidetracked here. What was I talking about, Luke?
You were talking about the questions you were asking, and then that people think you should be asking, and then you got into the third and seven running, and then consistently, PJ is consistently the one consistent thing outside of a number of different offensive coordinators.
I'm laughing because this is the first time I think you've actually listened to me. I just assume you put me on mute when I get on my soapbox and I preach to the public.
I've only sent like eight.
I assume that you have actually like an AI program going of what the cliff notes are, so you can just yell back at me something like that.
Yeah, it's actually a script.
I'm very proud of you. But I went back and watched the third and seven and why it failed, of why Femi Ijeboy just had someone immediately in his lap. Miscommunication between Greg Johnson and Ashton Beers at center. If it's blocked, like it's supposed to be blocked, where Greg Johnson or Ashton Beers there, whichever one was supposed to block the blitzing linebacker, you're at least in fourth and two, and then you may have gotten the first down. But I also understand the consternation of fan means fanatic. And fanatic, you don't always see things through the objective eyes, of which I feel like every single day I'm dying a little bit more inside with things like that. And his response is just one that we've seen now for nine seasons. And I don't know how else you ask it to elicit a response if he doesn't think it's a problem. And I would agree with many of you fans that those specific play calls and those specific situations are not playing to win the football game on the road. Where clearly the data points, and here's how I'll pose it to you, Luke. Would you agree or disagree with this statement? From what you had seen through, that would be the first 47 minutes of the game. Minnesota at that point, I believe, was trailing 17-14.
Yes.
From what we had seen, I thought Cal had been the better team and had executed more consistently. And if that is the case, and I know Minnesota ended up as maybe a 1-point favorite coming into that game by the end of it, I would have been more aggressive in that situation with a play call other than getting in 12 personnel and trying to run mid zone. Would you agree or disagree on a third and seven there?
Yeah, I would agree that probably is the call you should make if you're trying to win the game. But you also have to keep in mind, this is the ninth season of PJ Fleck, and we know that he is obviously risk averse. I didn't think he was as risk averse as a lot of people have made it out to seem. We can get into that later. But on that specific play, I can imagine his thought process is, oh, okay, we're currently on the Cal 33, or on the Cal 30, I'm sorry. If we run it here and we get 5 yards, we're at the 25, a little closer field goal. The worst thing that can happen here is we kick ourselves out of field goal range. I'm assuming that he thinks Brady Denneberg's field goal range is somewhere between 50 to 53 or 55 yards. The funny part about that is that they lose 3 yards on that play, Ryan, and then they still kick the field goal. So it kind of came back to shoot him in the foot. But I wasn't surprised by the call, just given the situation, because what PJ never likes to do is take points off the board or the opportunity to score points off the board. And that I think, is the rationale of why they did that.
Well, he had talked about how they had just hit a chunk play in the run game. And I'm staring right now, as we currently sit here in time, at the play sheet for that drive.
You mean the 8-yard run by Femi?
he called it a 12-yard one, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't remember that. Well, it's a good thing we have stats. The other thing within it, too, is they had thrown twice previously before that kind of three-thing progression, including throwing on first down. And the two previous throws were passes defended because Minnesota's receivers, of which we'll get to, are just struggling to get open. And the only guy who can get open is the Mankato West kid who can't catch a cold right now, with all peace and love to that family. You're not playing to win the game. You're playing to take points. You're playing to say that your defense is going to hold, which you watched Jaron Sangapolatele. I mean, that kid is going to be at least in the top tier of quarterback that Minnesota plays all season. Mm-hmm. Like, he was throwing darts all over the field all night.
But he wasn't just throwing darts.
Why not play to win that one, especially when your kicker was 3 of 9 in his career from 40 plus yards, and now is 3 of 10 from 40 plus yards. Like, to say that you have confidence in him from 40 plus yards is insane.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand that thought process there, but we'll get to that on special teams. Now, with the passing game, Luke, I will say this. If we want to be glass half full people, I will continue to beat the drum of, I think Drake Lindsey is the most promising freshman quarterback I've watched in 15 years of Gopher football.
Yeah.
The issue is every throw from Drake Lindsey right now has to be perfect or else this thing doesn't go. And that is a problem. Whether you're interpreting that as scheme, whether you're interpreting that as players, I think both deserve a little bit of critiquing at this stage. Of, I want to see it from Matt Simon's room, man. I talked coming into the season about how the transfer receiver thing in year one had to stop, where, I mean, we can continue to go back through time at this point, whether it was Corey Crooms in year one, Elijah Spencer in year one, and now you're seeing it in, of year one of Malachi Coleman, who's a non-factor and not playing. Logan Loya has 5 targets in 3 games, and Javon Tracy had 1 catch. Or he had two catches, 34 yards. And yes, I'm aware that he drew a couple of PI calls, but that's kind of my point here is let's run through the pass catchers right now, where Jalen Smith continues to start. And I don't disagree with that, but here's the issue. He is about the only receiver that can get open naturally because of his genetics.
Well, I would amend that maybe and say he and Coy. Coy seems to be able to get open too.
Correct, but
take that with a grain of salt.
We have a whole Coy Parrots discussion coming up. Yeah. We're not going to ignore that elephant in the room there about what to do with Coy now going forward. But Jalen Smith can get open, but Jalen Smith can't catch the football. And how do you address that with him? Because here is the conundrum: he is a redshirt freshman. Short term, do you just not play him? Because long term, you're going to need him because you can see the ability to get open. And these drop issues were something that had not surfaced at any point since January, which is their struggle. It's not a surprise that for a redshirt freshman to see that the lights are a little bit too bright for him right now. But how do you shut him down enough to get him reset without destroying his confidence? Because that is my worry here. You can see the talent, which is why I talked a lot about him during the offseason, because he was catching every single ball consistently in practice from when I was there, from when I was talking to people behind the scenes. But right now, he can't catch. And I don't know the right answer to this. And this is one of the things that Greg Harbaugh and Matt Simon have to figure out during the bye week. And I'll pose it to you, Luke. What do you do with Jalen Smith?
Yeah, at this point, I think you got to keep running with him. Because to your point, I don't know that anybody else is worthy of taking those reps away. I guess he and Lamecki can be duplicative in certain instances, but Lamecki is going to stay on the field too. I think for Jalen Smith, since you just continue to have to keep showing him tape, like, man, you got to get your hands out, right? And you got to catch it with your hands. It too often is getting in on his body and increasing the variables that could impact not making a catch, but also that a defender can get in and make a play. The skill is there. You got to find a way to foster and build confidence for him.
Which I also want to give you your flowers and your opportunity to step up on your soapbox for the Lamecki Rocket game.
Because my son, I did see some guy tweeted all he could think of was rocket ship. I mean, he had a great game, right?
He had a career game,
yeah.
Of which, that's awesome, man.
Yeah,
like, had never, and this is going to surprise some people, he had never at any point in his career, spanning all the way back to 2022 when he was getting significant routes, caught more than 2 passes in a game before or surpassed 55 yards. He did that on 1 drive.
Mm-hmm.
Ends the night with 8 receptions, 106 yards. Where would they have been in that passing game without Lamecki rocket ship?
Yeah, I mean,
they wouldn't be able to get off the ground because every other pass catcher combined didn't surpass the 106 yards that Lamecki had.
Yeah.
And you could see them going to some design stuff from Harbaugh on the backside of different plays, and Lamecki was there making catches. And I don't want to take anything away from the night he had. It was a career night. My worry is, are you going to count on that now every week going forward, that Lamecki is going to consistently catch every pass? And you saw on the one interception, I was not happy with the way that he came back to the football there. Now, the Cal defensive back, number five, also deserves some credit there because that had been the second time Minnesota had tried to go to that specific route concept.
Yeah.
I've knew that too, and he sat back and he broke on it. I just didn't like that the defensive back broke on it harder to the football than it was the receiver to the football. That bothers me, and I'm sure it bothers Matt Simon. So even if you want to count on Lamecki Brockington, you also have Javon Tracy. I'd continue to give him as many reps as you can possibly give. If you're going to take some away from Jalen Smith to try and reset him out of the bye, 11 needs to play the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
He does. You paid some big money for him out of the portal. Again, big money in terms of relative money for Minnesota. This isn't...
Yeah, you've said it before. I get it.
I just don't know how to stress that they're not paying $1 million or something like that. I'm not going to give you a specific amount because that doesn't help anybody in this situation. But Javon Tracy was someone that they were very competitive with in the NIL market to get him out of the portal. And he drew a couple of pass interference calls, but that's also the thing. He drew them, which means he wasn't creating separation. And even on his 50-50 ball win in the fourth quarter, it was a 50-50 ball for a reason. I want to see him be able to consistently win more out of his routes. That also leads us into the Logan Loya discussion. UCLA slot receiver the last couple of seasons who's caught over 100 passes. The thing that surprised me, Luke, when I dove into the PFF data to try and see, he has 5 targets in 3 games and 3 catches in 3 games. I mean, he is just not a part of this offense at all. You'd think, and I say you'd think because do you want to guess how many, where he ranks in the receiver room in terms of the number of routes run through 3 games? Where is he among the pecking order of the, say, 8-9 receivers who have played?
Probably middle, so I'll go 5 if you're saying 9.
He has run 38 routes, which is 4th most among all Gopher receivers, and it's only 6 less than Jalen Smith and 12 less than Lamecki Brockington. He just is not getting looked at for the football. Now, that can mean 2 things. It can mean 1, Drake Lindsey's not looking his way, or 2, when Drake Lindsey does look his way, he's just not getting open.
Or a third, which is the play wasn't really designed for him.
I think it's a combination of all 3.
Yeah.
I'd say Logan Loya needs to play better to force his way onto the field. I would say that the Gopher coaching staff has to figure out a way to incorporate 17 into the game plan more when other receivers are struggling. I also think I'm trying to find solutions to this pass catcher problem because that was probably my biggest takeaway for the passing game was Drake had to be perfect on so many of these throws to just have them get in there.
I just don't want to diminish the fact that Drake's actually been pretty good, right? He was 60% in this game. I don't think they're that far off. I hadn't really thought about the fact that it's new guys year one. Maybe it shouldn't be a surprise that Lamecki has, at least in this game, again, small
sample size. That's why we had so many questions come into the season it's year one of Matt Simon transfers, which he just does not acclimate them well in year one. It is what it is at this point. We've got enough data to essentially say that. It's also number 2, you're going to miss Elijah Spencer and Daniel Jackson when you replace them with, even if it's not a transfer. Jalen Smith and Lamecki Brockington were never going to step into the shoes. Now, it's unfortunate because I think Drake can provide the type of quarterback play that Max Brosmer gave you last year. You just don't have the pass catchers ready, which it is what it is. I would say, I know listeners think, why is it Matt Simon on the hot seat? I'd argue he should have been probably in a year or two before, especially because, too, he's the punt returning coach. We'll get to punt returning and that whole tomfoolery too, but Yeah. My thing out of this game offensively, and I know we got to switch here, also I could talk all day about this Gopher offense, is I wanted to know what Greg Harbaugh's counter is or tweaks out of the bye. It's running game now, trying to adjust to whatever Femi Ejiboy and Cam Davis is. And I even think we have to start talking about Grant Washington as someone who's going to start getting reps if Darius isn't ready to go out of the bye week.
Yeah.
What do they do well, and how can I change the scheme to make the running game go better with them? But that also goes hand in hand with, I would seriously think about making changes on the right side of the offensive line if I was Brian Callahan, the offensive line coach. Now, as so many people within the Gopher football building love to tell me, and I understand my place in the hierarchy, I am not Brian Callahan, and I don't get to make those decisions, nor do I get to make any decisions for PJ Flex football team. But from the three games of data I have, the right guard and the right tackle, I don't agree with their PFF stuff, and that is very subjective, and I'm not an offensive line coach. I'll be the first to tell you that. But from my eyes, the right side of the line is a bigger problem than the left side of the line. I'm excited about a future of Nathan Roy and Greg Johnson over there. And I think Ashton Beers at center has been much more consistent than Greg Johnson was. And I applaud the move that they made to make him the full-time guy. But now with your best two tailbacks, at least in their eyes, out for the foreseeable future, potentially, you've got to do other things around it to try and supplement the other running backs. And that would be, to me, inserting Khalid Tafai at right tackle and letting the other two duke it out. But how does Greg Harbaugh figure it all out during the bye week? Because you get Rutgers, Ohio State, and I believe it's Purdue. I know there's going to be some really angry people if I have that wrong. So let me look that up. But yeah, it's the, you have the ingredients there, and you have the most important ingredient there. Drake Lindsey, through three games, has surpassed my short-term expectations, really. I mean, he's been good. He just needs help. And I don't know if that means going away from more 12 personnel, going to more 11 and 10 to try and spread things out. I don't know what the answer is. I know my place. I'm dumb, but I'm not stupid. But you've got Rutgers, Ohio State, and Purdue coming out of the bye. You've got a week to figure it out. You've got a week to get a little bit more healthy, because I saw some guys that were walking around with ice bags and everything on, just like they are after every game. Mm-hmm. I want to be clear here. But the offense needs to figure out ways to stop getting across the 50 and then having drives die. That's a Harbaugh thing, but it's also a player's thing, where players need to make some plays. Like, they just need to make some plays, and that's where the stat that is sticking with me from this game, both from what I watched with my own two eyes and just from a 30,000-foot view, is Femi Ejiboy can't break twice as many tackles as the rest of the team combined. That is outstanding for the future of number seven, and I will continue to say I'd give him 20 touches a game going forward until Darius returns, and I don't think you can put the genie back in the bottle there either. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the skill position players need to do something when the ball gets in their hands.
Yeah, I think both these things can be true. I think that there's promise on the offense. You can see where you could find success, right? I think they have some guys. If Jalen Smith can start catching the ball a little bit better, I think Javon Tracy has given them a little bit more of a vertical downfield threat. But yes, as you said, in this game, they didn't get a lot of separation. And then additionally, you see the depth that they have at running back, right? If they can find a way to get consistent push and get those guys to gel. But again, this isn't a group that's been together for however many years, but this is a function of the new state of college football. They got to find ways to get better. And then I just think the X factor is Drake has looked really good. But as we have consistently said for years on this podcast, you have to be able to manufacture explosive plays. I think we have to talk about this play real quick, and this can maybe transition us to special teams. But the throwback to have Coy throw the ball.
I even forgot about that one.
That actually really hurt that drive. I don't hate the idea though. This is my point. Like, that ended up being a negative. Coy's got to be able to throw that away because it wasn't there. But I kind of like that they went for it there. So, you know, you you both these things again can be true. You can be frustrated at third and seven and say we got to throw the ball, but you also go, well, we tried to manufacture an explosive play with, you know, really catching them off guard by throwing it back to Coy, and then that didn't work. And yes, that's frustrating, but they're also trying. You know, that's the part that I think is really hard to make sense of.
I'm gonna offend some people when I say this, but you know what? I don't really care right now. So let me take, I mean this in the most endearing way. Let me take a long, strong sip of this Folgers Classic Original that's been piping hot and say, well, Ryan, they've been running the ball well. The freaking Harbaugh doesn't even know what he's doing. They should have just pounded the rock down the field. Hindsight is always 20/20.
Yeah, it's always easier. Point.
I don't disagree that they were running the ball well. They finally were. I mean, they had a 27-yard run from their 2-yard line. They get all the way across to a 2nd and 4 at the Cal 33. Would that have been where I would have called that play in that specific instance? No.
I think that is where I would have called it, though, because that's the element of surprise.
It is the element of surprise. And two plays before, they had just hooked up Drake Lindsay to Coy Parrish for 19 yards. Yeah. And if my memory serves, I'm pretty sure it was out of the same formation they tried to call this. So if you're Cal's defense, you see Cal there, you saw you just got beat for 19 yards, I'd probably be playing off Coy and saying, I know he's going to try to run past me. Instead, the guy immediately breaks on it, and then Coy just panics. I'm sure the message to him was, if you get the ball, they were trying to do a double pass to the running back, but Coy gets it, and he immediately has his defender in his face. Like they were trying to simulate there like a bubble screen.
Yep.
Of which the guy broke on, and he made a good play. But Coy also panicked, and he should have thrown that ball away, which I'm sure was communicated to him throughout the week. Or if you don't want him to throw away, if he gets it, sees it's not there, go be an athlete. He's one of the best athletes in the Big Ten. No one is.
Yeah.
No one is really. Instead, he panics, just runs backwards and loses 9 yards, puts him out of field goal range, because then on 3rd and 13, Lameke Brockington doesn't get open. It's a PBU. I mean, that went, if you're talking about percentiles of outcomes for that specific play, a trick play at any point is high risk, high reward. Mm-hmm. It is either a 5th percentile outcome or it is a 95th percentile outcome. There really, for those type of plays, is no in between. It was a 5th percentile outcome. You get knocked out of range and you get no points. I mean, it looks bad for Harbaugh. There's no way. It's either always for him, it's going to look great, he's going to look like the Joker, or he's going to look like the savant. It's a horrible analogy. I know I'm terrible at these things, and you guys all tell me I am. I'm trying to improve. I really am. I know I say of which too much, too. I'm working on that. I promise you I am. But that's the thing being the offensive coordinator. You are always the third most hated person, no matter what. It goes the head coach, the quarterback, and then the offensive coordinator. And when things go well for the offensive coordinator doesn't get the flowers. It's always the quarterback. When the quarterback doesn't play well, it's the offensive coordinator. I'm not asking you to feel bad for Greg Harbaugh. This is the reality for any offensive coordinator in any sport. Mm-hmm. But that specific call absolutely backfired. And that's where I will continue to say Minnesota has put up a lot of yards through the first three games. Like this 335-yard performance is their lowest output, which is still a good output for most Power Four games.
Also a very good defense. But
yeah, and we talked about it coming in. Cal is a good defense. Justin Wilcox deserves credit for running a good defense. The issue is total yards and what points are on the scoreboard against these, say, Group of Five Power Four opponents so far. It's not lining up. They put over 400 yards up against Buffalo, and they didn't amass how many points did they score against Buffalo again? 23?
Yeah, something like that. I'll look.
That doesn't match up with what actually – they're driving the ball. They're struggling to get it into the end zone or get points up on the board. And that is another thing that Harbaugh and this offensive staff have to figure out.
Yeah, it was 23. Okay, quickly, let's talk some special teams, and then we can catch a – we'll catch a quick break. We'll talk defense and then coaching. Special teams was tough on this specific occasion. People are going to focus on the missed field goal. They're going to focus on on Coy catching the ball at the 2 yard line for the fair catch, Ryan, but also trying to field the ball off the bounce and then, you know, giving that ball away where the game is still within reach. Ultimately, that's kind of what was the dagger for that specific game. Yeah, it all in all, it was a tough special teams game. I expected, Ryan, to look at this and find that the special teams EPA was terrible. Did you look at the special teams EPA?
If it's not terrible, what happened? Because
it wasn't good, but it wasn't as bad as I expected. It was only a minus 3.6.
How?
Is it?
I'd love to know the explanation.
I'd like to know it as well. I thought it was going to be terrible.
Interesting.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as expected. Again. When you let's talk about Coy real quick. When you're Coy and you want to make big plays and you don't get a lot of opportunities, is he putting too much pressure on himself is what I'm getting at.
All right, let's rip off the Band-Aid for the Coy Parrish discussion, which is Coy Parrish was involved in the most consequential plays in this game. And unfortunately for him, it all went negative.
Yes.
And there's not one sole player that loses you a game. We've spent the first, Lord knows how long I've already rambled, talking about other people not named Coy Parrish. But both things can be true. Coy Parrish was probably one of the players, if not the player, most responsible for what the outcome ultimately ended up being, but it's also not just his fault. There's plenty of fault to go around here.
Yeah, what was his PFF grade?
Defensively, it was not good, that's the discussion with Coy right now, is Coy Parrish has not been an elite player through the first 3 weeks of the season, and that is allowed. To be clear, that is allowed. We've seen plenty of players have sophomore slumps. The question is that I'm asking, that we're all asking, we even asked Fleck a book about Coy, is how do you get him right? Is it taking some of his return or offensive responsibilities off of his plate? Because he is a safety, and he is a safety that I don't think had a great game. He just didn't play well defensively against Cal. You look at,
right.
I think he could have jumped a pass in the first quarter there that he ends up being a step late on. Gets him inside the five, and then two plays later, he's the guy that doesn't guard the flanker out of the backfield because he has his eyes in the backfield. Walk-in touchdown. And then you've got the punt return stuff, which is so fascinating to me. I would have loved to have heard, because I don't know what happened in the headset here. The one thing I would have loved to have heard of all the things that happened on Saturday night would have been between Matt Simon, who's the punt return coach, and PJ Fleck. Why do I say that? Because after Coy Parrish hits a fair catch at the 3 yard line, which, what are we doing? Like, that is one of the reasons why Minnesota lost that game, is they got slaughtered in field position.
Yeah, 27-40.
Like, that is such a monumental swing in a game. I cannot stress those 13 yards for these two teams in these two instances is crazy. And when Harbaugh's offense is consistently backed up like that, what do you want him to do? I mean, it's a tough ask against that defense where you can't fair catch the ball at the 3 yard line. I'm not reinventing the wheel with that statement. But the thing I want to know is they replaced Coy as the punt returner for one punt. You saw number 39 run out there, which isn't a real player. It's Logan Loya, who wears number 17, go be the punt returner. He was the punt returner for UCLA the last few years. He had to go put on the 39 jersey because John Nestor, number 17, is also on the punt team. So that's kind of the explanation behind that whole thing. But Loya returns a punt, doesn't go anywhere, and then they throw Coy back there. Why did you bench him for one punt? What was the message you were trying to send? What was the whole point? Because then we get to the ball bounces. Fleck talked about it afterwards. Peter means get the F away from the football. And Coy sees it on the first bounce coming at him, and he's thinking to himself, like, he's probably done 100 times in practice, at ESCO, wherever. Oh, I can just field the second bounce and go be a playmaker. Well, the second bounce isn't even a bounce. It goes from being a pitching wedge to it looks like my 5-wood being sculled off the tee and nails him in the foot. Cal recovers. The game changes 3 plays later. It's in that instance, Coy Parrish, you cannot do that.
Yeah.
And Fleck said it afterwards. He had to learn how to touch the stove. And now he touched the stove. So what does he want to do now? Because I can imagine for someone like Coy, this is the most amount of adversity he's seen in his entire life. I can't imagine in his athletic career in ESCO, where he was always the best player, no matter what he did, that he saw a lot of adversity. And he hasn't played well on defense, special teams. I'd argue offensively, he's actually looked pretty good catching the football. But that's a whole different discussion.
Yeah.
Is what do you do to reset Coy Parrish? Do you take him off of offense? And you take him off of the return game and say, you need to go back to being the next free safety of the future to follow in the footsteps of Antoine Winfield and Tyler Newbin and get you right? Or what do you do? I don't know the right answer to this, Luke, but what's your impression?
Yeah, in some ways you wonder if he's pressing. We can talk more defensively about the scheme stuff as it comes to corners and the fact that they had Ethan Robinson and Justin Wally. Let's get to that later. Ultimately, there's something it just hasn't been there, right? And then specifically on special teams, he's been good in some games. You give Cal credit; they schemed and executed well. Like their punter executed extremely well.
The punting discrepancy in this game, by the way, I mean,
yeah,
my man Tom Weston. My fifth round selection in the All Big Ten draft, my boy.
He wasn't terrible, but he wasn't
the Cal punter.
Michael Kern was elite.
Net average.
Yeah,
like the punting discrepancy in this game. It was clear that Weston was told, "Don't even put the ball in play."
Right.
You saw the amount of times he kicked it out of bounds, which he wasn't. I know this discussion because I've had enough conversations at this point with Mark Crawford since he's graduated. Because he's consistently around at these Gopher practices, and you know me, I'm the special teams suck up.
Yep.
They're trying to place the ball in that instance between the numbers and the sideline to essentially corner that returner and give the rest of the coverage team. And unfortunately for Weston on Saturday night, he was putting the ball too far towards the sideline. It'll happen. It is what it is. And a 40 net average isn't the worst thing in the world, but it is when the Cal punter's got a 7-yard average on the other side higher than you.
Yeah.
So Coy Parrish, I want to let you spread your wings and fly on. How do you reset the young man from ESCO?
Yeah. Otherwise kicking, we talked about the Denneberg miss. We don't have to talk more about that. I otherwise thought that the Gophers did a good job of not getting burned, by the returners. Right.
Well, they just took DeJesus out of the game, yeah. Which should have been the game plan because that guy had been incredible through the first 2 games. It's just when the Cal kickers make theirs from 38 and 45. And then the thing that I talked to people about off season that over at the Gopher Football Complex that didn't agree with me. And that's fine. I know a lot of you don't agree with me and that's fine. We can have differing opinions and still see each other's point of view, which in this crazy world of ours seems to be a lost art, but 3 of 10 in Brady Denneberg's career now from 40 plus yards is a problem. Mm-hmm. How, and this is his only attempt at Minnesota, and it's a 1 kick sample size. I understand that's a very small thing. If I've learned anything from Luke Buehr's relationship with me, now, Luke, I don't even know how long we've been together. Do you know, honey?
I don't know. It's probably close to 10 years, but yeah.
That is that even for a math guy such as myself, who, great, I have a Calc 4 background. Oh, good for me. How high and mighty I am. It's Luke always reminds me that the data sets that we have within the game of college football are very small. And to try and extrapolate things from things that, say, in a season, you only have 12 games. It's not a very big number when you look at the scope of it. But when you look at Brady Denneberg's entire career, that has been my point to them since day one is, unless you think Brady Denneberg just has a technique issue, which I don't pretend to be Emmett Carpenter and know the idiosyncrasies of plant foot, drive foot, kick through the ball, of how to be an accurate kicker. But you've now got 10 kicks of sample size of Brady Denneberg from Syracuse to Minnesota where this is a problem. And we know we spent time talking about how last year Minnesota attempted more 40-plus yard field goals than any other Big Ten team. Mm-hmm. Now, this is essentially one of the first times where we've seen Denneberg have to do what Fleck loves to do, and he missed his attempt. It is what it is. It's a 50-plus yard field goal. For college kickers, I would imagine it's 50-50 at best. It's just you can't ignore the underlying data that you already have, which, great, it supports my theory of I'd give potentially Daniel Jackson a chance from distance, but I'm not at practice every day. I don't know. That's why I was so worried about kicking in one-possession games. And that, at the time, I will remind people, this was a 17-14 game. And he missed the kick. And unfortunately, Minnesota's defense gets a stop on the next drive. And then Coy Parrish tries to be hero. And the game is over after that. So you not only do you have 3 points taken off the board because of special teams with the missed kick, it's then the Coy Parrish thing. And there's no way of getting around. I'd argue special teams implosion in the fourth quarter was bigger than the defense's issue. It was bigger than the offensive issue, probably in the same tier of how that thing was called different ways with the coaching. But I really was hoping to not have this type of discussion midway through September, but special teams cannot be controversial, Luke.
Ryan, I went out to visit my folks at the farm this weekend, and as we were driving along Highway 12, let me tell you, I saw Blue Horizon project after Blue Horizon project. I reached out to them and told them my route, and they said, and I'm not even kidding you right now, there were 34 project sites within a half mile of where I drove from Roseville, as you know, out to the greater Wilmer Lakes area where my family farms. Just an incredible number of these pivoting solar arrays that are collecting mountains of sun and making people money.
I don't say this in jest. I mean it genuinely. Sweet giblets and junipers, is that a ton of Blue Horizon energy projects? So if you want to be like one of those 34 different projects just on Luke's drive, like so many other people have been, what we want you to do is go to bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. Fill out the form today. That is so many projects. Again, bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. Fill out that form. Become their next solar project.
Ryan, once again, the Burns Insurance Agency is here to provide the best service possible. And Ryan, they can shop for you and find you the best deal possible on your home, auto, boat, ATV. I don't know if you know, my dad just got a new basically Ranger, and you know that sort of thing definitely needs some insurance.
It certainly does. And for an agency that doesn't want to be the biggest, they just want to be the best in terms of service. And that's where I've actually been going through the claim service with the Burns Insurance Agency, and let me tell you, it's incredibly painless. We had a big hailstorm come through Roseville in late July. I knew that I had damage. I was up in my upstairs and I could listen to the quarter to bigger than that size hail come down on my roof. And I told my insurance agent, hey, I want to get somebody out here. Can you help me? And within 24 hours, somebody was on my roof. They're chalking things up. It's super easy. And I got a check in the mail today from the insurance company. All I did was just text my insurance agent, or for many of you, you can just give them a call. So if you think that you're paying too much for your home, your auto, whatever it may be, commercial, business, support a Gopher fan who supports us here on the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast. Go to insurancebyburns.com, all one word, or you can just email him directly, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
All right, Ryan, let's talk about when the Gophers were on defense. Field position was definitely an advantage for the offense of Cal against Minnesota, with the average starting position around the 40. Cal ended up amassing 27 points in the game. And frankly speaking, their quarterback was really the differentiator. They really couldn't run the ball, Ryan. They only had 61 total rushing yards. But Sangapulatele had 297 yards passing. Maybe more impressive was the fact of how he could extend some plays and find, you know, just like that kind of backyard football, right? You just an extend a play, and then eventually somebody comes open, and he threw some darts too. The reality is he was probably the best player on the field.
He looks the part of a five-star, don't he? I was I said it earlier in the episode. I think he is going to be among the best, if not the best quarterback that Minnesota will face this season. And that's not a slight to whatever the Ohio State and the Oregon quarterbacks look like when they play them, especially since Minnesota plays them at their home. But Sagu Polatele was legit. I think a lot of things can be true because I know the consternation with the Gopher defense, and I understand it, is, but Ryan, they should have just blitzed them all night. And I actually went back on my rewatch because I thought it like you. It felt like Minnesota didn't send pressure enough. Now, I think the discussion we have to have before I give you some more data in terms of how often Minnesota blitzed, at least in one specific situation, is Danny Collins, Minnesota's defensive coordinators. His lineage is two different defensive coordinators. He came up with Joe Rossi, spent a lot of time with Joe Rossi, and that reminded me of a Joe Rossi, bend, don't break type of situation, where if you're going to rush three or four and drop seven or eight, you're not counting on the quarterback being able to consistently hit the right window and zone coverage time after time after time. Now, after 60 minutes of data, I would argue, Sagu Polatele can easily do that time after time after time, which is why he's a really good quarterback.
Yeah.
The other school of thought is the Corey Heatherman type of, we're just going to bring chaos and pressure at times. And now, Heatherman was someone that did also drop in his zone. But the decision that Collins had to make was, am I going to trust my corners or not? Because when you do bring pressure with five or six or seven or whatever that is, you put your corners on an island and you put your safeties on an island. And the thing I think I learned from this game, based on what Collins elected to do, which was drop in his zone, was I don't know that he's got a ton of confidence, or at least in this specific matchup against Cal's receivers, that he had a lot of confidence in his defensive backs. That makes a lot of sense to me with Justin Wally no longer here as a four-year starter. Ethan Robinson was really good. I know John Nestor has played well, and I think he played of the two corners on the outside the better game. I don't think Zaquan Bryan had the best of games. Mm-hmm. Where on my rewatch, when Minnesota did bring pressure, of which I know I see I'm catching myself with my drinking game here, and I'm, like I said, I'm attempting to work on it. But there were 13 different third downs for Cal, mm-hmm. which I think the average distance to go was almost 9 yards. So on the 13 different Cal third downs in this game, on average, third and nine. How many times do you think Collins sent a blitz of some kind?
I think you actually already sent me this, so we'll let the listeners guess. Pause for effect. It was 10.
I'm sure the average listener is going to say four or five. They sent pressure 10 different times on 13 third downs. I understand the counter argument is that you should have shown more pressure earlier on early downs, because in the first 40 minutes of the game, I would say, the pass to run ratio for Cal was absurd. They abandoned the run almost, in the first almost 40 minutes of the game.
Then what did they end up with, 16 carries in total? Like,
and so many of those came on the final few scoring drives for them, where they
24. Yeah.
They counterpunched Collins, and Minnesota's defense wasn't ready for that. And Brian Harsin, who former Mark Coyle hire at Boise State, Brian Harsin, who then flamed out in spectacular fashion at Auburn, I think he won the upper hand there, and that's going to happen. But the decision that Collins made is the one I keep coming back to. Minnesota's not going to come out and say this, because why would they? That doesn't put their players in a positive light. I think even when they did blitz and bring pressure, you still saw two things. One, Sagu Polatele could extend the pocket, extend the play, and then he was able to find guys down the field consistently. But within that is, I didn't think Minnesota's pass rushers did a great job of maintaining their rush lanes. What is a rush lane? Well, you don't want to have your outside guys, your defensive ends, go behind him, allow him to escape the pocket. And too often I thought they either got too deep, or the reality was too, I watched a lot of Gopher defensive ends go face down in the ground. Mm-hmm. I didn't think the defensive ends, I think Anthony Smith played all right. I know the stats show that he had a good night in terms of tackles for loss and sacks and things like that. And he had some flash plays, but overall, the defensive ends, I don't believe, did a good enough job of keeping him in the pocket. And then the interior pressure was just nowhere to be found. JLR was playing on one knee. Devin Eastern didn't have the greatest of nights. Rushon Lawrence flashed at the end of the game with a couple tackles for loss, but they just didn't get enough consistent pressure with three or four, and that was a problem. Mm-hmm. You allowed Sangapolatele within that to just sit there and pick you apart, which he's very capable of doing. So I'm going to pause here and ask for your opinion here. The discussion is, which one would you have done? Is trust the Gopher corners and defensive backs, which I will tell you, I don't think the safeties either had a great night, as Kerry Brown was dealing with, as Justin Gard reported on the sidelines, a back injury, and they went right at Kerry Brown on that drive after Minnesota scored the touchdown where the Gophers were up. They went right at Kerry Brown a few different times where if Kerry Brown makes the tackle at the line of scrimmage, it's a 0 yard gain.
Yeah.
Instead, he doesn't make it, and it's 35 yards between the two plays. Now, he's playing through injury. McCoy and Goosby also didn't have a great night, in my opinion. There'll be some things that I think folks should watch on the rewatch where the Gopher defensive backs were even running into each other in zone coverage and falling down, which is not – you can't see me do this, but I'm aggressively rubbing my temples right now, as I'm sure the listeners are hearing that. But do you understand the discussion within that, well, they should have just brought pressure all the time?
Yeah, I mean, I generally think I understand the sentiment that people had. I think in part you want to bring more pressure because that was when Sangapolatele struggled the most. And that is, I don't know that they got a sack without bringing pressure, right?
And they had... According to Pro Football Focus, Minnesota had 11 pressures.
Yeah,
on Saturday night against Sangapolatele.
Does Pro Football Focus give you? Does it give you like if on those pressures, how many?
I'm looking into that. So okay. Give me two.
So at least from the stats I can see, there are 3 sacks and 6 tackles for loss. Pretty normal, actually. Right? Like that's not a bad game. That said. I think that when they didn't bring pressure and he had time, they just kind of got ripped apart. I think that, to your point, I think that's the friction in your point, right? The fact that if your corners can't hold up and they're not getting pressure, like there's some sort of balance you have to strike of keeping them off balance, right? And I think that's the challenge that they encountered.
So there's multiple things true when you... It all depends on your point of view and your perspective on this. So this is Pro Football Focus data when looking at two different things. When Sangapolatele was under pressure, he got pressured 11 times. I mentioned it. He was 5 of 8. And all 5 of those throws went for a first down.
Yeah.
Well, and very explosive or not explosive, but to the other side of the coin. And like I said, I understand the point of view that everybody is saying. And I'm not saying I disagree with it. When Minnesota blitzed, which was 43% of his dropbacks, 43% is a lot of times to be blitzing, to be clear here. 43% of his dropbacks, when he was blitzed, he completed 43% of his passes for 2 touchdowns, actually. When he was not blitzed and Minnesota sent 3 or 4, you ready for this one? This is crazy. He was 17 of 23, which is 74% completion percentage for 234 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, felt about right.
So either way, it's the whole saying of you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Pick your poison. And I'm telling you for the 5th time here, you pick your poison of do you want to put your corners and defensive backs who weren't having a good night on an island where – if he makes an accurate throw and it's a missed tackle, it's a 70-yard touchdown. Mm-hmm. Or do you want to die by 1,000 cunts, which is dinking and dunking? Yeah. Don't know the answer. I can tell you I saw that one of the answers that Minnesota elected to go with, but to blitz 43% of the time is a significant amount.
Yes, it is.
I would have probably been closer to 50 or 55 by the end of it, knowing what those splits are now. But hindsight analysis is always going to be 2020, Luke.
So I think a good segue of this kind of conversation was the late field goal that they got. So 43 seconds left. The Gophers had a great drive, 16 plays, 69 yards, took 6 minutes and 30 seconds off the clock. There's 43 seconds left. And, you know, generally speaking, yes, you can maybe get into field goal range, but you're going to need to rip off at least an explosive play to make it seem reasonable, right? And I think the thing that was just really disheartening defensively was they got that on literally the first play. Sanga Pulitele gets a 29-yard completion, and now they're in business. They're already on the Minnesota 46, right? That whole sequence there, I think, was maybe more disappointing to me than anything, that they gave up that late field goal that gave Cal the lead going into halftime.
Yeah, and see, that's a great instance that you talk about there, where on the first play, I do believe on that long connection, Minnesota sent pressure.
That's the risk, right?
But then JKS made a better throw, and the receiver planned a play on the ball, and the Gopher cornered in. There was also another play on that final drive before half where Minnesota drops eight into zone, and two Gopher defensive backs run into each other in zone coverage, and then it's a deep out near the sideline for an easy pitch and catch. So I just think the players need to play better. I think Collins, like I said, this is probably the first learning moment of his career as the defensive coordinator, mm-hmm. going against Brian Harsin, who in the final 20 minutes of the game, his ability to then throw the changeup of the running game back into it after he had completely taken it out. I believe in the first half, they threw something like 25 times and only ran it with a designed running back run four or five times. They would go from completely abandoning the run to on that drive where it's 17 to 14 Minnesota, they get a couple of long runs as they go at Kerry Brown and he isn't able to make a couple of tackles. And then that kind of throws everything into a loop. So I understand the anger. I do, because the stats when he was blitzed versus when he wasn't blitzed are staggering. It's just, I also understand the point of view of number 13 for Minnesota, Mike Gerald, was off the injury report and playing in his first career game in significant action, and I thought it looked like it at times. I didn't think Zaquan Bryan had the greatest of nights. I already talked about Kerry Brown. I didn't think Coy Parrish had that great of a night, where on the first touchdown, he gets his eyes into the backfield and not on the flanker, who is a slot receiver, the best skill position player for Cal, and he doesn't have his eyes on him. He's responsible for him. Jets out in the flat for a walk-in touchdown. That can't happen. I didn't think Aiden Goosby had the greatest of nights. That's what's going to happen when no one it really plays well outside of probably the linebackers, or even the touchdown that they get where John Nestor and Emmanuel Carmo put the Cal tight end in a pirouette and he walks into the end zone, of which, did you see the celebration for the Cal tight end?
I don't remember it.
He essentially is mocking John Nestor doing the whole hands down thing. I don't know what the kids call it. I'm not young and hip, but is young and hip, is that still a saying? I don't know what the youngsters and the youths are still calling it, but I don't know. I wish I could give you more concrete type of answers, but when the defensive line doesn't contain JKS and you allow him then to make the second play, and he's really good at the second play, and he was really good at changing his arm angle and making accurate throw time after time after time, and you combine that with the defensive coordinator having some learning moments, and you combine that with the secondary just not playing well, that's how you end up giving 27 points. And even within that, the game changes because Coy Parrish hits him in the shin, and then you gift them field position to make it a two-possession game, and the game's over.
Yeah.
It happens. That singular play, the Coy Parrish off the shin, because I will remind people, Minnesota's defense gets the, I think it was a six and out, whatever it was there.
A six and out, yep.
Well, guess what? It would have been 17 to 14. The Gopher offense would have got the ball, say, at the 10-yard line or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Actually, Coy should have just let it go into the end zone at that point, and they could have been starting at the 20 or 25. Instead of getting the ball back for your offense down three with 8 minutes to go, Cal scores three plays later and the game's over.
Yeah. Well,
it's not just the defense. It's not just special teams. It's not just the offense. They all didn't play well down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point on the corners in particular. I don't know that there's a lot of confidence there. And to overcome, you know, any ineffectiveness at corner, you have to be able to get a pass rush. And I think to your point, another good point is the lane discipline piece makes that hard because he's able to extend plays. I don't care how good you are at corner. If they can extend plays, it makes it all the much harder to cover because of just time, right? It all kind of mounts on itself. And I think the safeties, it's going to be interesting to monitor. I'm not saying the safeties are bad. I still think the safeties are actually good. But I think that there might be an element of the two senior corners last year that were really solid, and Ethan Robinson and Justin Wally help make those guys' jobs a little bit easier. To just kind of conclude my thoughts on defense, Ryan, I still think this can be a good defense. We have to keep in mind an elite quarterback can really put strain on your defense, especially if they can extend plays. And we just have to give Sangapulatele credit. And I know we've done that a little bit here, but he deserves it. That was really impressive. And, you know, Drake Lindsay isn't the same kind of play extender per se, but his pocket presence was also very good as well. And the Gopher defense was able to get some kind of explosive plays in the fact that they got tackles for loss and sacks, but just wasn't the right one. And then here's my last comment, and then I'll stop on my little rant. If that ball isn't tipped, Coy Parrott picks it off and it's a pick six.
There was a second down play of which Coy had the quick out perfectly jumped, and unfortunately for him, the defensive lineman does his job and gets the hand in the pass lane. And if he doesn't, Coy Parrott runs 75 yards to flip the game, and it's potentially over. Seriously.
Yeah, I know. It's just when we talk about the margin for error, and we've criticized PJ for making the margin of error tighter, right? But those are the types of plays you need to be able to make to win games. And it was there. It's just like one guy did his job too well.
That's the one piece that doesn't, it includes Danny Collins now, but it even goes back to last season. And I wrote about this in my takeaways after the game. In Minnesota's last five games against FBS competition, so you're talking a sample size of three games last season and the first two of this year, not including the Northwestern State game. Do you know how many takeaways Minnesota has? And I'm defining a takeaway as an interception or a fumble recovery.
Oh, I don't know. They were good last year for a good portion of the year. Did it tail off or something?
Take a guess. In their last five games against FBS competition combined, how many takeaways does the Gopher defense have?
Four.
One.
Ugh.
That is a problem.
Yeah.
And it's a problem in itself where the only takeaway in that time period, in that sample size, is a Zaquan Bryant interception in the bowl game against Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
The issue, besides the easy low-hanging fruit there, is because PJ Fleck wants to play trestle ball, you're going to rely on, and I hear about it after every game, the 78% missed tackles, explosive plays, and the turnover margin. Well, if you're consistently losing the turnover margin, even when your offense is only turning the ball over with takeaways once or twice a game, if you've only generated on the flip side one takeaway in the last five games, that's a tough place to live.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's a real tough place to live. And that's the one qualm. And that predates Collins. There's three games of Corey Heatherman at the end of last season included in that, and then the Buffalo and Cal game this year. But now it spans two defensive coordinators. Mm-hmm. The players are different, but the issue remains. They need to find a way to get takeaways. And we mentioned one of the instances was the Coy Parrott one. I'm sure Coy is dying because he wants to make the play. I think we all see that. And the one time he reads it perfectly, the film study is there, the athleticism matches it. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunately tipped at the line of scrimmage, which could have been 70 yards the other way. But that is one of the things that Collins has to figure out during the bye week, is how do we generate more takeaways? because I look 2 weeks down the line when Ethan Callie, McManus, and Kirk Shiraka make their first return to Huntington Bank Stadium. We all know that if Ethan Callie, McManus can get sped up a little bit, the throws are going to be hot and they're going to be errant. Mm-hmm. And you need to figure out a way to, in the short term, looking at just the next opponent, speed up Ethan to be able to generate takeaways, as in another type of coin flip type of game, which this Cal one certainly was all the way until the final moments. You need to get more takeaways, and that's something the Gopher defense is just struggling to do, which goes back to the end of last season.
Yeah. I didn't have anything else defensively. We can talk a little bit of coaching if you want. I don't know. The sentiment online is like PJ was ultra conservative. I can see it on like a play-by-play basis, sure, but maybe in the aggregate, I didn't necessarily feel that real time.
Third down and seven run. Yeah, that's the one that everyone's going to point to, and I don't disagree with.
No, I don't disagree with that either. And that's the where I'm saying on a play-by-play basis. But I think in the aggregate, I still think he's skewing more aggressively.
Where when they were aggressive, and it's not even flex decision, I would say, with Coy Parrish electing to field the second hop, is where they got burned.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times I heard Flex say it afterwards, and you've heard me say it on this episode, and touch the stove and find out. Mm-hmm. It's the whole chart for those of us of the meme generation of it's the X and Y axis of F around and find out. And he found out. Now he's hopefully going to learn from that. But when they did get aggressive with the trick play call, or they did get aggressive with a blitz, I will remind you, Sanga Politele had two touchdowns on blitzes.
Yep.
Two of the three touchdowns came off a blitz. Mm-hmm. So it's the whole, everything is so much easier to do now 48, 72 hours away.
Yes,
it is. And I don't disagree that Brian Harsin, the Cal offensive coordinator's changeup of the running game in the second half, wasn't adjusted to quickly enough by Minnesota, or Sanga Politele's ability to just torch you and pick apart the windows, or I don't know. It's not easy to figure out. It's not.
No.
And it's unfortunate that in a game like that, where one possession games, 3-4 last season, and I know I had a couple people reach out to me and say, Ryan, why do you keep acting like 3-4 in one possession games is bad? It's average. I mean, I tell you, it's slightly mediocre. But why I continue to bring it up is because of the way PJ Fleck wants to win football games, which is just like you saw on Saturday night. This game total was 40 points. No one was expecting a lot of points in this game. And with 11 minutes to go, 8 minutes to go, it was 17-14. And if you're going to win games at the University of Minnesota the way PJ Fleck wants to do it, you have to be good in one possession games. And Cal was 2-5 in it last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were terrible at it, which is why they didn't live up to their capabilities as a team last year. And it's unfortunate that in the first instance of the preview of what can we expect to see when you need to make the winning plays, Minnesota found more ways to lose it than Cal did to win it. I think that's a soapbox or a tree I will die on. Is I don't even think in the final 20 minutes of the game Cal necessarily won it. Minnesota found so many ways to lose it, which Fleck also talks about. And he says a lot of things that I don't agree with. He does. But he does insert certain things of which he said after the game, and I agree with him, they just found a way to lose it more than Cal did to win it. And that's so much of football at the collegiate level because they're 18 to 23-year-olds. These aren't the professionals that you watch on Sunday where everything is so crisp and clean and it's a lot cleaner of a game. That's mm-hmm. the beauty of the college football level is the chaos within it because you don't know what you're going to get from 18 to 23-year-olds, Luke.
Yeah, for sure. All right, you got anything else?
Any of the Big Ten games you want to get into? I think we will do a bye week episode talking about, at least Luke and I, we'll see if we'll get a guest or not, what we like, what we don't like, what we change, things like that. So for those of you looking for a little bit of something to do during this heat wave, to mow your lawn or whatever that may be, know that that is coming.
With regards to Big Ten games, just maybe real quickly, I mean, Ohio gave Ohio State a scare for a little while.
I watched the entire Wisconsin-Alabama game from my hotel room out there in San Fran. And my two remarks are Alabama's quarterback was on a heater, which the stats reflect. He was 24-29 for almost 400 yards and four touchdowns. And then on the flip side of it, Wisconsin's offense is just – this was my worry for Wisconsin was their offensive line, and they lost their center who's been battling something. He came back and then was ruled out again, but – their offense, I just have so many questions about. And now it doesn't get any easier. And I posed this question to, I forget who, and I'll pose it to you here too, Luke, is how many games now going forward for the Wisconsin Badgers are they going to be favored in? Because I set the over-under to this person at 1.5. Now, let me read you their remaining schedule here.
Yeah, I'm looking at it too.
Okay, so you're looking at it. But for the listeners, it's a home game against Maryland this weekend. Then they're on the road at number 21, Michigan, home against Iowa, home against number 1, Ohio State, on the road at number 6, Oregon, home against Washington, on the road against number 19, Indiana, home against number 9, Illinois, and on the road for the Axe in Huntington Bank Stadium. So would you take the over or the under on 1.5?
I'd probably take the under. Honestly,
I think they will be favored this weekend. I can probably find the line.
Yeah, I think they probably will be favored this weekend. And then probably the games that they have a chance to be favored in would be Minnesota, Washington. That's probably it.
They're 7.5-point favorites this weekend.
Yeah.
That thing is brutal, which is why I said before the season, Wisconsin's going to be lucky to get to a bowl game. And now Billy Edwards didn't go against Bama. We'll see if he's ready to go this weekend against Maryland, and maybe that changes things for their offense. I don't really question their defense. I think that Alabama's skill is Alabama's skill, and the quarterback was on one, and it happens, and you're on the road. It's tough to win on the road.
Yeah.
But I just want to know, where are they going to be at mentally and physically by the end of this grind?
Yeah, for sure.
Especially in those final – there is a realistic possibility – that by the time they play Iowa, maybe Iowa's ranked if they can pull off the upset against Penn State, but it's still Iowa. It's a rivalry game. That's a tough team. Mm-hmm. Or even your Washington Huskies, Luke. And I think Washington is a team that is certainly capable of winning plenty of games this year.
Yeah.
And we all have questions about Minnesota. I have questions about Minnesota. But
I still like
so many ranked games again and again and again and again and again. And I just want to know where they're going to be at physically by the end of it.
Yeah, I still like Minnesota's potential and their schedule. Real quickly, just other couple comments. We probably should comment on the fact that Deshaun Foster has been let go at UCLA after a 35-10 loss to New Mexico.
That does this mean I get to spend the next 3 months talking about Fleck to UCLA rumors again?
I mean, I think the better question, sure, that could happen. I think the much better question in that situation, Ryan, is who wants that job?
Yeah, I'll say two things here. One, the Fleck to UCLA thing was real last time.
Yes, for sure.
But this time around, I just do not see it. Why don't I see it? Because I believe that Fleck's side of things, number one, was able to then get a much better view of the absolute dumpster fire that is UCLA right now. We've talked about previously how UCLA is, I think this number is still accurate, like $50 million in the red the last 5 years.
They're financially like
they're
probably borderline insolvent.
They're terrible financially. Their AD Martin Jarman is likely going to get fired here very soon.
Exactly what I was going to say.
I don't know what the chancellor is going to do. It is chaos. Plus, UCLA in that market is not even – they're an afterthought. I mean, you saw the amount of fans at the game, and I understand apathy will do that, and I think fans were very apathetic, especially after New Mexico wins by 25 points to put UCLA at 0-3. I just do not see Fleck, and I understand there's probably a section of the fan base that is tired of this year after year after year. I get it. I do. I just don't see it. Now, I've seen names like D'Anton Lynn, who is the USC defensive coordinator, formerly at UCLA. I just don't think that's a very good job.
Right.
So I don't know what's going to happen there. Even at Virginia Tech, who fired their coach, and that's where you're starting. I think it's fascinating that last year it felt like the coaching carousel was very late. Now everybody's trying to get out in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
So to fire Deontay Lynn, just to make one more point about the flex stuff.
You mean to fire Deshaun Foster?
Yes, excuse me. Deshaun Foster. Now, we'll find out if they negotiated his buyout down and out. I believe it was around $6 or $7 million, which we talked about already. UCLA consistently does not have money. They're running up debt that they can't pay. If they fire their athletic director, that'd be another $6, $7 million. And then if you're going to go out and get a sitting head coach, you have to pay, in this instance, if it were Fleck, another $7 million. Plus, you have to give him a raise. Mm-hmm. Plus, you have to bump up his assist. Like, I just don't see a world. I don't think UCLA has the money. And I don't think the Fleck camp wants anything to do with it, to be quite honest with you. But
yeah,
UCLA letting go of their coach in September wasn't something on my board. But when you go 0-3 and get blown out by the Fighting Jason X, I forget what random town in Wisconsin Jason X is from, by the way. But they can go stand up. They've been bad.
Yeah.
They've been bad. So I get it. It's just, what does the rest of that team do now? As when any coach gets fired, I'll remind fans here, players then can immediately hit the portal.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
You got a bunch of red shirts happening.
Doesn't have UCLA on the schedule this year.
Yeah.
But that team is just, I don't know what to expect from that team now going forward.
All right. One other game maybe worth commenting on real quickly. I didn't get to watch any of this one, but kind of caught my eye. I thought that USC would pretty much roll Purdue. It was 33-17, not particularly close. But I was impressed with what Purdue was able to put up, and being the fact that the Gophers are going to be able to play them. I know they were down at one point 20-3. But yeah, it ends up 33-17. Yeah. I don't know. I think they're better than they're either better than I think, or USC is worse than I think.
I have two takeaways. You ready? One, did you get to see the thick six? And I say thick with two C's with an exclamation.
No, I didn't.
We got to see a fat boy touchdown.
Nice.
And I get to say fat boy as someone who's 240 pounds. So you don't get to take that away from me. There is nothing more I enjoy, and it comes up on my Instagram Reels algorithm because I'm a true millennial and I don't have TikTok. I love watching thick six compilations or just seeing giant 330-pound men rumble down the field for that moment that they've been waiting for their entire life. So Jamal Jarrett, number zero, gets to rumble 70 yards for a thick six. It was absolutely tremendous. The other thing I would mention from this game, Luke, and I saw a tweet and I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
It was just big plays everywhere.
Yeah.
Like the amount of chunk plays. Are you ready for this? There were on the USC side of things.
Mm-hmm.
They had 14 different plays go over 15 or more yards. And then on the Purdue side, they had 12.
Like, wow.
Everything was a chunk play in this game, which makes sense why USC threw up 460 yards and why Purdue put up 357. I have a lot of questions about USC's defense. I think Purdue's offense is also probably better than what we're giving them credit for. I'm still absolutely petrified of Devin Maccabee coming into Huntington Bank Stadium in mid-October.
For good reason.
I mean, known Minnesota killer Devin Maccabee.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's questions about the Trojans, but the thick six was a big part of them getting it done.
All right. Well, disappointing loss, but always fun to break it down. Hopefully this gave you a little bit of perspective going into the remainder of the season. I'm going to enjoy following the Calgary rhythm and monitoring their situation for the remainder of the season. We talked about how good their coaching staff was. Sanga Pulatelle was definitely the real deal. I hope that you guys have a good bye week. Thanks for listening, and go Gophers.